Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm trying to share my screen here. Can y'all see the presentation?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, as Sean has described, part of your broad authority is in shellfish aquaculture. A bit different for shellfish aquaculture is that, unlike most of the fishery authority to the commission, a lot of the authority for shellfish leasing is in statute, and it begins in 113.201, and it runs for five or six pretty comprehensive statutes that sort of dictate how shellfish leases are done. And then some additional leases were put into, or some additional aquaculture statutes were put into place a couple years ago by the General Assembly regarding finfish aquaculture, but they did not give any rulemaking authority in those statutes to the commission. So even though we tried to get that to happen. So what I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about was shellfish leases, and you kind of have a real fine edge to walk here in your authority. So in 113.201, it's basically the policy of the state to encourage the development of private commercial shellfish cultivations in ways that are compatible with other public uses of marine and estuarine resources, such as navigation, fishing, and recreation. That one sentence has probably created more conflict in my life, in my history here at Marine Fisheries, than anything else. You also have the authority to make rules and take all steps necessary to develop and improve the cultivation, harvesting, and marketing of shellfish, both from public and private beds. But then, in order to ensure that the public, that some waters will remain open and free from shellfish cultivation, you may limit the number of acres in any area that may be granted as shellfish cultivation leases. So when someone applies for a shellfish lease, the first thing our staff does is to see that it meets the basic criteria for a lease in 113.202, and there are six standards. It has to be an area suitable for cultivation and harvesting in commercial quantities. And commercial quantities you have defined in rule as 10 bushels per acre. It has to not contain that natural shellfish bed, which is that 10 bushel limit. It has to be compatible with the lawful utilization by the public of other uses, and that is often an item that's very hard to tease out, and that's why we hold public meetings and public hearings, and we get public comment on things. It can't impinge upon the rights of riparian owners. So there are rules in currently in place with 100-foot setbacks off areas without permission from the riparian property owner, but Shannon Jenkins will be talking to you a little later on about the rule updates that they have on where we are on rule updates to sort of, you know, modify some of those things to meet that standard. It can't be in an area that's included with our shellfish management program. So it can't be over an area we've culch planted or an area that's a seed oyster management area or something like that. And then it can't be in a polluted area naturally. And so a lot of the waters that we have in North Carolina, particularly in the southern part of the state, are closed at least part-time because of pollution. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that acreage limitation that you have. And let me go over here and see if I can remember my lesson. So this is a picture of the Newport River. Many of you may be familiar with it. If you're not, let me go get my my little pointer here. So this down here is the lower part of the Newport River where it goes out. The state port is like below this picture, and then Beaufort Inlet. And so it dumps out past the state port. It's been a popular shellfish lease area for decades, going back into the probably the late 1800s. But certainly, there's a lot of shellfish that have been harvested out of this area. It's also used quite a bit for shrimping. You can see this dark line up here. This is actually the shrimp line. The shrimpers can't go past this point, so they sort of make that turn right there. And then what you're seeing here is sort of the density of leases. So this is the intercoastal waterway coming up. Actually, this is the intercoastal waterway coming up through here, going into Core Creek. So you can't put leases there, and there are setbacks off the intercoastal waterway. Above this line is pretty much permanently closed due to pollution. This is the Cross Rock. But you can see along the shore and up into the Mill Creek area, you have quite a bit of shellfish leased area. So the blue here are bottom leases. They're primarily, just culch has been placed down traditionally for oysters to set on, or they may be clam leases where clam seed is set, it's purchased, and then it's set, and then they put protective predator netting over the top of it. And that was traditionally how leases, were done. The green areas are the water columns, and that's really where you see the more intensive culture. Although you can do intensive culture on the bottom now, because in 2015, the General Assembly defined a bottom lease as a lease with a structure that came no more than 18 inches off the bottom. And what this allowed was for leaseholders to use intensive culture cages and to grow greater quantities per acre. So you can see here, of all this area, it's about a 1.5% of the river's total area that is leased. And so it's not a tremendous amount, but we do get a lot of conflict, particularly with leases coming up along this shoreline. A lot of people go in, they buy waterfront homes, and then, they have leases out in front of them. So there is some conflict here, not as much as we'll see in some other slides, but a fairly low percentage. This is probably the highest density area that we have of leases, and that's for a couple reasons. This is Stump Sound, so New River would be back up this way. This is the intercoastal waterway coming down through here, so of course we can't lease in there. There are polluted areas up in the tops of these creeks that can't be leased, but this is a famous area for oysters, and a lot of people have traditionally been in this area. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of what are known as franchise leases, and you'll see these yellow margins out here. Those are franchise sites that actually have proposed water column amendments put on top of them. So franchise leases, if you'll recall, are sort of the old term was King's Grant. They were actually claims to bottom that people have deeds on, and so they can pretty much they own that area for the use of shellfish leasing. And so it there you pretty much can't take them away. You can still keep them. They have to mark them, and you can still take action if they don't keep them marked and produce. But then they can just say, I want to start leasing on this, and you start again. So this area has a lot of acreage leased, and the area I really want you to focus on is this area down here, which I believe is Permuda Island. So this is a National Estuarine Research Reserve. The boundaries are just the land itself. But over the past several years, we've seen a lot of leases being proposed in this area, both bottom and water column. And you can see sort of the proliferation now along the side. And what happens in shellfish leasing is it's very difficult to site, and applicants do a ton of homework using various siting tools that both we have and UNC Wilmington, Dr. Troy Alphen has. It's a fantastic siting tool. But they do a lot of work to try to get these things into places, you know, where they live. And you really have to site a lease sort of near where you live to be able to work it. So when a lease gets granted in an area such as down here, what often will happen is other people, they'll talk to other people and they'll say, "Oh, well, Bob got a lease over there, you know, near Bermuda Island, so we're going to go get a lease." And so all of a sudden you'll see a bloom of applications. This was happening in Boke Sound, and that conflict there resulted in a 2-year moratorium. It was also happening down in Masonboro and Myrtle Grove Sound in New Hanover County, and that also resulted in a 2-year moratorium. So we don't want moratoriums because they're sort of a knee-jerk reaction way to manage, but we do want to be able to ensure that these leases are compatible. So again, this is a very highly dense area. This is New River, so just to the north of that area, and you can see most of the leases that are in this area are these old franchise leases. These are old clam leases, and many of them are greater than 10 acres because in the past leases could be, you know, we have 100-acre leases up in Pamlico Sound that were leased, and over time that lease acreage changes. But we are starting to see some new leases that are going in. A couple of these leases, like one of these over here, it was actually a guy who sort of got run out. We ran him out of the estuarine reserve down in Masonboro Sound when we, you know, when we discovered that you could not lease in the waters down there because those waters were part of that reserve and a national preserve. And he was good enough to you know, find another site, and now he operates out of New River. So, but this is just, you know, it's a big area, but it's only really about 1.6 areas. This is Camp Lejeune over here, and there are some restrictions building over there. And of course, there's navigational channels, there's mechanical clamming that goes on in here, shrimping, those types of things. This is an area that it doesn't look like much on this picture, and I would zoom in, but then you'd sort of lose context, and it's got some erroneous information down here. That's not Wrightsville Beach. So this is the Scotts Hill area, you know, down in the New Hanover, Pender County area, and there's Highway 17. And this is the Intercoastal Waterway coming through. So as you go farther south in the state, this is more what the environment looks like that applicants have to select for shellfish leasing. It's very skinny water. It's got a lot more inlets, so the water quality is very good in general. But there's a tremendous amount of back beach marsh. Some of the marsh is actually even held as what are known as Board of Education grants, and that's the example behind Figure Eight Island. So, but if you look at this area, this little sliver of water through here is an area known as Greene's Channel. And 3, 4 years ago, there were no leases in that area, and now there are four or five, and maybe another one or two that may be proposed. So this is starting to cause a lot of controversy between recreational fishermen, commercial crabbers, commercial netters and these people putting leases in. And so you can see most of these leases, we work really hard to try to minimize that conflict, and that's why they're so tiny and slivered, and you know, some of them you probably have to be fairly good in navigation to find your way to them, like that one. But this is an area where, you know, basically less than a half a percent, if that, of the area is covered. But again, where they're putting them are sort of the available waters where a lot of people go. And so this, you know, we've had issues where you can see this little back channel in here, where this little spot is right there. We've had people try to site close to the back of beaches, which are sort of popular for people to go, you know, on the weekends, and it's more quiet than it is. You can walk across and kind of do that. That was one of the issues we had down on the northern end of this island up towards Topsail. And we've gone to court over some of these as well, and been successful in blocking and unsuccessful in blocking. So this is like the last slide I have. This is just sort of a summary of the percent of the water, the total acreage that's leased. You know, we could do a lot more homework and say the total amount of acreage that's actually suitable under 113.202, but I thought just for right now I'd give you sort of the highlight. There are a couple other areas that I don't have here. The primary one that may start becoming problematic are some of the backside areas behind the Cape Hatteras area, where people are putting some leases in. For the most part, we haven't really had a whole lot of issues with those. But as this industry grows, which it is, it now harvest of shellfish off leases surpasses wild harvest. It's a very valuable commodity because most of these leases, particularly the water quality leases, market half shell oysters, and you know, they're sold for you know, people like Sam sell them for like high dollar. So you know, here's your dilemma: is sort of promoting shellfish and keeping this going because it is a good thing for North Carolina, and it's a good thing for these folks that are growing them, and we heartily support it. But it is in some areas getting a little problematic, in my opinion, and I just wanted to kind of show you that, particularly on the heels of Sean's presentation on your authority. So that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Any questions right now on what Steve just presented us?
I have a quick information question. Yeah. Who has jurisdiction over finfish aquaculture? Is that agriculture?
No. The jurisdiction is in statute alone, and Marine Fisheries is the lease agent. So I can't remember the statute. I believe it's like 215, 216. Don't quote me on it. Yeah, there is no rulemaking authority. You know, we tried to influence that bill on multiple occasions and were unsuccessful. So it's, but to that point, we really haven't had any applications for a finfish aquaculture lease. Now, unlike shellfish actually has, when you apply for a permit with us or for a lease, our job is to issue the lease or deny the lease, and then the Army Corps has a permit for it, and it's under a nationwide permit with regional conditions, and that's nationwide permit 48. So the finfish side does not have that equivalent permit. So in order for somebody to get a finfish permit, they would also have to have a general permit from the Army Corps, which would go through their process as well before we could grant a lease. So,
thank you. And I think I forgot to say it's Martin Posey who's speaking.
Yeah, thank you, Martin. Any other questions right now?
I got a question, Mr. Robert.
Okay, Robert.
Steve, and I just don't know the rule on it, but is there any rule saying that to protect these leases from just recreational boaters being in the area, I guess they can run right over them and it's not a problem?
Well, yeah, it is a problem. For a bottom lease, yeah, you can pretty much run right over the top of them. It's also really dependent upon where you are. If you're up in Doug's neck of the woods, you don't have much tide. The tide's mostly wind-driven up in the Sounds. So there's typically enough clearance over those to where you can run, a boat over the top. But down in the southern part of the state where you are, and you got big 5-6 foot tides, the gear, even on a bottom lease, these cages, they may be exposed at low tide. So we don't recommend people drive over leases. But that goes back to that squishy language that says it has to be compatible with navigation and things like that. So it's a problem for us.
So, you were talking about Green Channel. I was there on Tuesday afternoon fishing that whole little area in that flat. And I guess these things are, I can see how it gets really shallow in there. Are the leases marked with those PVC pipes? Is that what's marking them?
Yeah, they have to be marked on each corner.
Okay.
And then you'll typically see, particularly if they have bottom cages or some sort of intensive culture, floating cages, whatever, you'll typically see other floats, or you'll see the gear itself up on the top of the water. And you can, you can go on to our site, or we can send you some pictures of what that material would look like. And we've given those kind of presentations to the commission before. So that's really the balancing act that we have, is promoting what has now become an intensive culture operation. When I started with the commission, nobody grew oysters except Jim Schwarzenberg out of Sneed's Ferry. Everybody grew clams. If you did grow oysters, it was on Colchon Bottom. Now, the vast majority of new leases are intensive culture leases. So people are either using cage culture, rack and bag culture on the bottom, or they're using floating bags or floating cages on the top. And we have a few that are using like long line systems, where there's actually poles out of the water where they grow them on line. So they can grow really high densities of oysters this way. And the vast majority of those are triploid oysters, so that they're marketable year round. They're very plump because they don't reproduce. So, but the navigation issue is a problem.
Yeah. Doug.
Okay, thank you.
This is Doug. Robert, I'll give you an example. My bottom's right there in front of my plant, and we've got poles every so many feet, whatever was recommended by division. We've actually got lines between those poles running perpendicular to the shore, but we made sure when we put the bottom in, we didn't get anywhere near the navigable channel at all. But we put our cages, we've got a warp column lease, we put our cages on the bottom, and we attach the cages with seed to the lines, and then we set the more mature oysters that we're grading out, free set those in between those lines. And I'll have some of those different gridded off spots that I'll have 200, 300 cages in. And they're only, the bottom that I've got them on is about 4 foot deep. So they're susceptible to a prop if you were to get there amongst them or not. Saturday morning, I went down there. We were still unloading some boats, and I was going to try to go fishing. Looked over, I had four different guys in the lease doing donuts around pots, you know, and they're trying to catch a trout or a flounder, which I don't mind them fishing. But I went over there and I said, look, guys, I said, you know, we've got submerged gear in here, but I don't mind you fishing around the edges, but please don't be in between these ropes where everything's gridded off. Because every pot with the gear is, you know, you're running $100 to $120 in gear per pot to put this stuff down. It doesn't take much time to damage a lot of gear. And they all moved off, and they all moved off to the edges and whatnot. But that's what you run into when you're talking about your water column lease and your bottom lease and all that. And I mean, most of you guys, if you say something to them, I don't think they really realize the scope and the diameter of those pots that are on the bottom and how much gear is involved and how much money is involved. So it can be a big problem, but it doesn't have to be. I mean, if we kind of keep some buffer zones and keep this thing to a common sense level, it shouldn't be.
Thanks, Doug. I would just say that, you know, I think a lot of people don't know what those PVC pipes are getting. And I would agree.
Say what? This is Robert, right?
Yeah, this is Robert. If somebody came up to me when I was out there and told me what it was, please get out of there. I know I would respectfully get out of there, but I think a lot of people would do the same. Those areas where I am down here, there's a lot of people that can get back there, especially when the tide comes up a little bit. I'd just be curious to see any new leases coming up and where they are. Thank you.
Yeah. So, this is Steve. It is not illegal. It is not unlawful for someone to go over your lease, even if it has floating cages on it. And that is part of the issue. You have an older law that says you can't restrict navigation or fishing, and then you have a newer law that authorized water column gear, and it never addressed any of that. And so communication is really the key, and you're correct in that, Commissioner McNeil, in that it's really trying to be a good steward, and we encourage our leaseholders to reach out before they apply and to try to talk with local fishermen, recreational, commercial fishermen, and sort of get an idea. But we do have, you know, we have an internal review process that it goes through when a lease comes here. We also send it to the Division of Water Resources and to Division of Coastal Management for their input. The Army Corps weighs in, and then if we think it has a chance of going to the next level, I authorize a 30-day public comment period, and we put that out through various means, including our website and a press release, and then the law actually requires us to do two legal notices in the local newspaper, which is getting interesting because local newspapers are folding. And then at the end of that, we have a formal public hearing to invite people to come. All that time, the lease has to be marked with a proposed lease sign that we provide the person. It's a laminated sign. But we still have people that, you know, don't know what it is or didn't know it was going into place. And there are, you know, legal ramifications, and Chairman Bizzle referred to that a little bit in his opening comments. So.
Doug, do you have something?
Martin, I think you're muted.
Doug Cross.
I was muted.
Wait a minute. Steve, were you finished on what you were saying? Okay.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
We'll make sure. Okay. Doug, did you have something?
Yeah, I was just Doug again. Robert, I was going to tell you that Steve's talking about the signs that they give out. We've got signs that look like almost like stuff coming down 70 in our corners. And you can see them from halfway across the river. And I've got yellow warning signs under that. I've even gone as far as putting solar-powered yellow flashers on top of my corners for night. There's not a better marked lease in this state, I would say, than that, because we're right there near the Vandermeer boat ramp, and I'm trying to avoid problems. So,
yeah,
a lot of it is they may not know what it is. A lot of it is they just want to fish in there. So, and I don't, and I understand that because I do too. You know, as far as catching fish, but sometimes it is because they don't understand. Sometimes it's not. I guess is my point. That was it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Thank you, Doug.
Oh, I'm sorry. Steve, I just have one quick question.
Yes.
Do I remember correctly that the legislature changed some of the language regarding leasing recently? And if so, is compatible still the current language?
Yes. Yeah. They change this set of laws every time they go to Raleigh, I think. But yeah, compatible is still there. And I know that was talked about with the shellfish working group. The problem with some of those definitions is if you define what compatible is, then you end up having to define what the definitions are to define compatible. And that was the circle that people started getting into when they were doing that. We look at over 30 different metrics when we look at these leases. And then, you know, we do a site investigation. I mean, we do a lot of homework. I mean, that's why it takes so long to get a lease, is the amount of work that staff do to try to get these things in place. So.
Okay. All right. You got you. Is that good for you, Martin?
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
All right. Okay, great.
I have one quick question. This is Sam.
Okay, Sam.
Sam Romano. Yeah, I was just curious. This is a question for the director. Is there any program for a lot of these people that want to get into growing shellfish that they can get in touch with some of the more inactive leases or places, you know, to instead, like, for instance, with my shellfish business, I purchased my leases from prior leaseholders. So I didn't go through the state and get it mapped and all that. It was actually a previous lease, really old leases. And I'm wondering why we have so many new surveyed leases and not as many people purchasing leases that already have been traditionally used. Is there any program that people can know so they, when they get into it, they don't think, well, I'm going to have to pick my piece of water and so forth?
So I think they're, the state does not have that. And I know Virginia has started to provide a space for people who want to transfer their lease or sell their lease. The only way that I would know, or the only place I would think, would be like in the trade groups, like the North Carolina Shellfish Growers Association may have mm-hmm. that type of information if people wanted to do that.
I would just think that it would encourage, so, you know, it seems like a lot of burden, you know, with all this new bottom being mapped out, that if people knew, you know, that they could buy, it gives them a head start as well. Like I actually purchased Jim Schwarzenberg's lease, and you know I was able to get a head start because it already had, you know it just had some previous work done out there. I bought gear from him and everything else, and it certainly was more expensive, I guess maybe you could say, but there was less conflict because it was already there already. And I just feel like that's kind of an easier in route than you know. So many just like, you know, planting flag, this is my bottom, I'm gonna start working it, you know.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. The new mapping tool that the Shellfish Lease program had that mm-hmm. you guys had a chance to view with Jacob and Laura, it I believe has a tool that shows terminated leases. So
right.
And we do now have the ability to to lease terminated leases, at least for a short period of time. So.
Okay.
All right. You good, Sam?
Yep. Thank you.
Okay, great. Great. Thank you too, Steve.
One quick question. Tom Roller?
Yes. Yeah.
This is Tom Roller, director. I have several fishing guides, particularly from the New River South area, and their concern with the water column leases is some of them will prevent their ability to get to areas that they fish. Is that something you address in the review process? It's not so much a navigate, it may not be a navigable channel, but maybe they're trying to get to some of these back bays and creeks and they're worried or no longer can get there due to the water column leases.
Yeah, Steve Murphy, it's Commissioner Roller, that it is essential that kind of information come to us when we put those leases out for public comment, because that kind of information, if I know it blocks a traditional use area, and I have guides or somebody telling me that, that really helps me to make a determination on whether or not to grant that lease, or I can modify the lease. I can modify the boundaries to cut an edge off or do whatever. And when we do that, the lease applicant either has to accept the modifications or it's denied. So typically leaseholders will work with us to, we'll say, hey, this area right here, it's not a marked navigation channel, but it's the only deep water in the area. Right. And so we'll work with that. But we really need to hear from those people. And I would encourage, you as commissioners to sort of keep an eye out. If you'd like, we could add you to the list of lease public comment and hearing if you're not already on there. Laura could work with Jacob and his group to get you on that. So you could maybe get that information out to the stakeholders that you have. So
thank you, Jerry.
That would be great, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions of Steve? Okay, this is a good example of the rule of unintended consequences. When aquaculture was starting to be considered as a viable form of producing aquaculture, we had no idea it would go to this point where there is more leases and more need for the aquaculture than we thought would be there. Steve has and staff has a number of criteria that involve whether or not a lease should be granted. But one of those is truly the density in given areas. And from looking at Steve's presentation and the tool that we saw about where these leases are and what type of leases they are, this is probably going to be a significant problem for the generalized public in years to come. If you all feel the same way that I do, that we need to give this some consideration, and I don't know what the percentage is, how far from shore, but more or less give some guidance to separate water bodies and what's the maximum amount of leases that should be granted in these areas. If we think that this is something that needs to be considered, I'd like for somebody to make a motion that the staff comes back to us at our November meeting with some suggestions for our consideration about limiting the quantity, volume, what have you, of these leases in their given water bodies. Does anybody feel that is something that we need to at least have a discussion on?
Yeah, this is Robert. I would make that motion, Steve.
Okay.
I mean, Rob.
All right, great. Is there a second to Robert's motion for this?
Mike.
Who was that?
Rob.
Mike Blanton seconds it. Any other discussion on this? Let's get Patricia or somebody to put up the
Okay, can you put, who made the motion and second it again?
Robert made it and Mike seconded it. Mr. McNeil and Commissioner Blanton.
Okay. And can you just repeat the motion again? I'm sorry.
I think it's to ask the staff to do a study on concentrations of leases, shellfish, aquaculture leases in given water bodies. 1 second, Doug.
Chairman Bizzle, could I ask a question? This is Steve Murphy.
Yes.
So currently I don't have a lease biologist. Mike Graven, who headed the lease program, it took a job with information technology. And so I'm without somebody to do this work. Can I maybe postpone this till February?
Okay, we could even say we'll say it to the February meeting, if that's okay with.
I don't mind the motion. If the date could be February, that would give them some extra time.
Robert, Mike, is that okay for it to adjust the motion that way?
Yes, Robert, that's fine with me.
Okay, Mike?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, great.
Thank y'all.
I'm stepping all over Robert's rules, but we got unusual circumstances.
It's all right.
The concentration of shellfish leases in given water bodies for the February meeting. And we need something in there with recommendations. So to concentrate shellfish leases with certain more bodies, comma, with record. Yeah,
that's good.
There you go. Okay, Robert, is this the motion as you made it?
Yes, it is.
And Mike, this is the one that you seconded.
Yeah, fine with me. Thanks.
Okay, great. Any discussion on the motion?
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay, who we got?
Sam, Commissioner Romano, Sam.
Yeah, Sam.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious what else, because the presentation we just saw kind of gave us the percentage per water body, and I'm kind of curious what additional information that we would be seeking.
Well, is it adequate? It's kind of like, this is what we have, what is adequate. Is that too much? Can they have more than that? You know, we need to get the experts involved in this to say, you know, what their thoughts are on it and come back to us with recommendations.
Rob,
hold on a second. Sam, yeah. Hold on. Sam's not finished, I don't think. Hold on a second. Okay, Sam.
No, I'm not finished. I was just curious. Okay. Like, you know, you said, you know, we know the percentage, okay? I'm just trying to see, like, what actual information other than the percentage in an area. So I guess I'm not understanding exactly what you mean. Like, I know the expert opinion, but what opinion on what actual subject? Like, on the subject of, you know, yeah, I'm just not kind of – I feel like we've got the information. It's just whether we want to do a, you know – what we want to do about it, is it substantial? And I guess I'm kind of confused on what additional information you would say.
Okay, what I see this study giving to us and us possibly considering is how much is enough? What's too much as far as leases go in certain water bodies? And that is something that is going to we need the experts to chime in on this. I don't think any of us here are equipped to say it needs to be 1%, 2%, 10%. And that's where we need to hear from the experts for our consideration and give the director an additional tool to make the best decision for aquaculture and for the general public as far as the use of the water system.
So you mean expert in terms of like a biological expert?
Well, I guess a biological expert or just somebody that's got some knowledge on What is too much? I mean, is if you get put, in fact, let me go ahead and refer over to Steve. Steve, you got your hand up, and I'm welcoming that right now. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if this is not where your intent is with the motion, just let me know. But what we showed you today was sort of a percentage of water, right? So this is the coverage for percentage of water. But within that water itself are a lot of areas that you cannot put a lease, right? They're navigated, they're navigation channels, they're polluted, they're within 20 feet of a shoreline. So, you know, we don't really have the facility to do the level of spatial analysis that that you saw that we sent, that National Marine Fisheries did for us in Bogue Sound. But we can look at GIS layers, and this is a GIS exercise, to where we can say, you know, what is the percentage of leasing in areas that can be leased? And that's probably a better metric.
Yes, sir.
And then we can come back to you with some recommendations on what we feel would be a reasonable options with a high and a low of, you know, amount of acreage in an area. And then you know, because really that, and Sean can correct me, but really that's kind of where I see the limitation is limiting the number of acres in an area. So, so really that would be what I would want to come back with, would be sort of that GIS look, getting down into a little more finer detail, and then coming back with some recommendations there. And it would probably be sort of by area. And then you guys could debate that and tell us if that was where you wanted to be. And if so, you know, we'll move ahead from there.
Okay. I don't think it's a true biological concern. It's a more of a user conflict concern. And I think that's where we're going with that. Does that satisfy you for right now, Sam?
Yeah, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just kind of really trying to understand, you know, I feel like we're going to have to make some hard decisions regardless. What I just saw up there, I mean, it pretty much made it clear where the areas where we had to make decisions. I mean, I get it. I understand how to – I just don't know what other information I'm going to see that would really shed light on much. But I definitely – I'm for the study for sure.
Okay. We'll see what the study brings us back. Okay. Doug, I see your hand's up. You got something?
Yeah, I was going to – that's Doug Cross. I was going to comment on basically what Steve and Sam both said, that if you look at that NOAA tool or that National Marine Fisheries tool of area, and it shows just in that example, it shows you areas of that should be open, no conflict, and open, and then you've got areas of conflict. I mean, I think that what we should be looking at and going forward is just like Steve's talking about with these, with the GIS layers and whatnot, and where you're going to have your automatic you can'ts through the rules and recommendations we already have. But then I think you're going to look at your tools after that on conflict. And that's basically what it's going to boil down to, is if you got specific areas of conflict, like Tom was saying something about guides and all that, and, you know, you're going to have to map all that into it. But, you know, beyond that, so far as what you can and can't do, if you don't have a conflict and there's not another issue in there, then there should be a percentage remaining of available bottom after that fact that should be available in that area. And then you can treat each area separately, and then you can regulate accordingly. And I think that's the key, is to give it a maximal sustainable availability. But yet we may decide on a percentage we don't want to go beyond. But I think that's what we need to be looking at. What can we actually put in these areas and not have conflicts? And then we decide a percentage out of that.
Yeah, I agree 100% with you. And I think that's where we're all trying to go, is what is per water body? What is the maximum amount of acreage we feel can be leased without causing major user conflicts? And they'll let them come back to us at the February meeting with their suggestions, and we'll take a look at what they got. All right. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, this is Martin Posey.
Yes,
Martin. On one hand, I don't have any problem with the motion, but I think this is far more complex when it's as written than we may at first think it is. For example, you can have limitations that are biological. We have modeling out there, farm model, other models that have to do with water flow, have to do with upstream downstream effects, potential chlorophyll removal that may affect clam operations. So you have the biological concentration. But more importantly, I think when this is conversation, is sort of a social economic user conflict.
Mm-hmm.
There, we're talking about what kind of land use practice we have. Is it primarily agricultural? How far are we from developed areas? If they are developed areas, what kind of development occurs there? What kind of development is proposed there? What kind of current and future boat movement is going on? We have both the traditional waterways, as mentioned earlier, then the other waterways that are used by people that may not be formal channels. I'm a little concerned that if we come back with a recommendation, it's going to be very simplified unless we really set what is the priority we're looking at for the maximum concentration. That's going to be very different if we're talking about transportation and water access than if we're talking about biological carrying capacity, than if we're talking about conflicts with the adjacent landowners. And I'm not sure DMF can quickly by February incorporate all of those conditions in a way that would be, you know, defensible by water body. And also, as Director Murphy was saying, it's going to vary strongly by water body and even within sections of a water body.
Yeah. And we'll see what they can do. He may not have that position even filled by then, but we're setting February as the goal for right now, and we'll just see what happens.
Okay.
All right. Any other discussions or comments on this motion?
Yeah, Chairman Bizzle, this is Steve, Murphy.
Yes, sir, Director Murphy.
Just I remind you that in 113.201, the way the statute reads is it says, in order to assure the public that some waters will remain open and free from shell fishing cultivation, the Marine Fisheries Commission may limit the number of acres in any area that may be granted as shellfish cultivation leases. So I don't want to get into an exercise where I'm looking at the actual biological compatibility. This is the law speaks to use and not to anything else. So that's where I want to focus, not getting into a lot of detail that I don't have information on or would have to go do a lot of work on it.
Right. And Martin, to your point, those are good points. And I'm sure that is looked at in the overall granting process of these leases. But right now, what we're looking at is 100% user conflict. We need to make these waterways not clogged up with the leases, but Director Murphy really has no tool in his back pocket that he can pull out and say, okay, I'm constricted to X amount, and that's where we're coming in here. Okay. All right. If there's no other questions or discussions on this motion.
This is Martin Posey again. Can we say and bring recommendations based on potential conflicts to the February MFC meeting to clarify that these recommendations are based upon that conflict aspect?
Sure, if Robert is willing to adjust his motion to that for clarity, and Michael, okay, Michael accept a second on it with those words. Joining again, Warden Bolly, bring recommendations to,
on potential conflicts.
You got it.
Yeah, that's fine with me, guys. This is Robert.
Okay. Mike, good with you?
Yeah, it's fine with me. I just would maybe say potential user conflicts because there's
a
Thank
okay.
you.
All right. Now, Motion before you. In no more discussion, roll call vote. Laura.
Get myself unmuted. Here we go. Commissioner Croft.
Aye.
Commissioner Blanton.
Aye.
Commissioner Hendrickson. Commissioner Hendrickson. Okay, I'm going to come back to him.
Come back to him. Yes. Well, hold on. Is that you, Tom?
It's me. Can you hear me?
Now we got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hello. All right.
Yeah. Thank you. Commissioner Cornegie?
I don't. Aye.
Commissioner McNeil?
Aye.
Commissioner Posey?
Aye.
Commissioner Roller?
Aye.
And Commissioner Romano?
Aye.
And Chairman Bidwell?
Aye. Okay, motion passes. Sam, was that was an aye from you, right, Sam?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, motion passes unanimously. Okay, thank you all for addressing that.